This is Radio Boston. I'm Kimberly Atkins. It's Friday, which means Week in Review, beginning with a major verdict in Boston federal court. John Kapoor, the one-time billionaire and founder of Insys Therapeutics and other top executives, were found guilty by a jury yesterday on charges of racketeering. They could face 20 years behind bars. Prosecutors accused them of bribing doctors across the U.S. to prescribe a highly addictive fentanyl spray. U.S. District Attorney Andrew Lelling is calling it, quote, the first successful prosecution of top pharmaceutical executives for crimes related to the illicit marketing and prescribing of opioids. Michael Canty, himself a former prosecutor, tells CBS the verdict sends a powerful message.
This case had very good evidence. I think that this will send a message to other prosecutors that, look, these are cases that can be brought. And if you have the evidence and you can put it before a jury, there's hope that you can get you hold those criminally responsible.
Aaron Leibowitz, an analyst for Law 360, agrees.
I think the fact that they were able to win a conviction in this case, and not only a conviction, but on a serious charge of racketeering conspiracy, suggests that there could be more of these types of cases being tried.
Andrew Kolodny, co-director of opioid policy research at Brandeis University, says doctors should also be punished.
I'm not saying that we need to throw all of the doctors in jail who took these bribes, but I do think that medical boards should take action against these doctors. I can't think of anything more unethical than accepting a bribe from a drug company to prescribe a dangerous and addictive drug.
Sentencing dates have not been set yet, and Kapoor's attorneys say they'll continue to fight. But what are the implications of this verdict? Let's turn to our Week in Review panelists. Renee Loth is a columnist for the Boston Globe and a contributor to WBUR's Cognoscenti Ideas and Opinion page. Welcome back, Renee.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Also with us is Jennifer Nassour, a former chair of the Massachusetts GOP and CEO of Reflect US. Welcome back to you as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we'll start with you, Jennifer. What is your initial reaction to this verdict?
Good. I'm glad. And actually, I don't think it's long enough. And I mean, you know, this is criminal behavior. They're trying to get people hooked on drugs. And as someone who had a sibling who died as a result of a drug overdose, I think put them away for life because they're ripping away the lives of our kids, our brothers, our sisters, our parents, you know, and I think that there is just nothing to make any family feel better about their actions.
Renee, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this is an important reminder that corporate crimes are not necessarily victimless crimes. I mean, there are something like, I don't know, almost 1,000 people dying every week from these opioid abuses. And, you know, that's more than people who are dying in car accidents. But we learned in this case that these were not accidents, that these defendants knew that the drugs were addictive. They knowingly paid millions of bribes and kickbacks to these doctors and others to get them to prescribe these, you know, deadly drugs. And, you know, I think it's appropriate to go after individuals in this case.
You know, one of the crucial pieces of evidence in this trial, which lasted 10 weeks, was a rap video that was created by the company in 1995 for a sales conference. In the video, two salesmen promote the use of fentanyl sprays, Subsys, and its dosage process known as titration. It even featured the company's vice president of marketing, Alec Berlikoff, dancing around in a Subsys costume. Let's listen to a bit of that video.
I love titrations, yeah, that's not a problem. And I got new patients and I got a lot of them. If you want to be great, listen to my voice. You can be great. Choice.
Insys Therapeutics, that is our name. We're raising the bar and we're changing the game. To be great, it takes a decision to be better than the competition's. Right. VIP service like they never seen. Build relationships that are healthy. Got more docs than Janelle's got selfies.
So we're talking 2015 when the opioid crisis was pretty well known. This feels like a pretty cavalier attitude for these executives to
have,
Jennifer.
Yeah, I mean, it's cavalier. It's arrogant. It's malicious. It's willful intent. I mean, the whole thing, everything that they're doing, it is so disgraceful and so I mean, their words cannot describe. Again, I mean, as a anyone who's ever been on a board, your responsibility, you have a fiduciary responsibility to what you're on the board for, but also to the people that you serve. And I mean, I think that if you look at the board members, if you look at the corporate actions, the fact that they thought that putting out a rap video and doing that for a conference was something that would help their purpose, knowing what Oxy and what the drugs were doing,
right.
It just despicable.
And another piece of evidence was the testimony of two former Insys sales reps that say they saw one of the other defendants in this case, Sunrise Lee, a former stripper who served as a regional director at Insys, perform a lap dance for a doctor. Now, it's worth saying that in a statement to CBS News, Insys says this, the actions of a select few former employees are not indicative of the hard work conducted by our talented team today. Renee, how does that explanation fly for you?
Oh, well, you know, I love that line in the rap video that you played about building healthy relationships. You know, oh, my gosh, how many ways is that video wrong? You know, I think it's important to also recognize that this is, in my opinion, a far better outcome than most of what we're seeing in these cases where states have been bringing charges against corporate entities for, you know, their role in the opioid crisis. And most of these are ending in settlements. They're hush-hush settlements. You know, there's some, multi-million dollar fees or fines that are accounting errors for these companies.
Right.
And you never get to the disclosure, the discovery, and the kind of fact-finding that we saw in this case about how these corporations operate when you have these settlements. So I think this is a far better outcome than that.
And you're speaking of other actions. Attorneys General from Massachusetts and New York brought a suit last month against the Sackler family, which has controlled Purdue Pharma, the company behind the painkiller OxyContin. The filings argue that the family pushed aggressively to expand the OxyContin market for years after they knew it was highly addictive. Jennifer, what do you think that this Insys verdict means for the Sackler family, for other actions like this?
Hopefully it means they should get prepared to go to jail for a long time and have their money stripped from them. I mean, they're, again, profiting off of people's lives, profiting off of destroying families. And I think that, you know, they have been living the high life and they can say that they've been giving money away to great causes. But, you know, if I was, MoMA or, any of the Louvre and I have, exhibits due to their money,
yeah,
I would probably want to get rid of those exhibits because that's drug money.
Yeah. Let's move on to another story involving law enforcement. Middlesex County District Attorney Marion Ryan and Suffolk County DA Rachel Rawlins filed a lawsuit earlier this week against U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, known as ICE, seeking to block the federal immigration authorities from making arrests in and around Massachusetts courthouses. DA Ryan says the threat of arrest means immigrants are being denied their right to appear in court.
Witnesses who may have seen something happen to any one of us or a member of our families are forced to choose between the protection of themselves and their family and their civic duty to come forward.
And D.A. Rawlins told us on Radio Boston this week they're trying to protect victims of crime.
I have an obligation to victims. We have child rapists that were removed prior to a victim being told this information. And who do you think has to tell those victims that they no longer have their day in court and the defendant's gone? It's not ICE. It's the DA's office.
But President Trump, in a phone call to Boston Herald Radio, didn't see it that way.
I think that it's a sad situation and very unfortunate for Massachusetts, a great place that I know very well. So many friends up there. And, you know, these are people that probably don't mind crime.
Renee, what do you think about all this?
You know, I think that the DAs are right to sue. I think this case raises real questions about the federalism, you know, the relationship between the federal government and the states. In my opinion, I think this U.S. attorney going after the judge in this case is a kind of an overreach and an incursion into the state's operation of the state courts by the federal government. it's a complicated case and there's a lot of aspects to it, but the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts had issued a ruling in 2017. A lot of people forget this, saying that detaining non-citizens who would otherwise have been free to go in a court case because of an ICE detainer was out there for them was illegal, was not to be done. So, you know, maybe the judge, who was relatively new in her job, was, you know, believing that she was following that Supreme Judicial Court order, which is a Massachusetts order, not a federal order. And so we have a conflict here between federal and state jurisdiction. And I think that if nothing else, the case may clarify that.
And it comes right on the heels of last week when U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling's office indicted Judge Shelley Joseph and a former court officer for obstruction of justice, saying that they allowed someone to slip out of the back door of the courthouse. Rollins told us that this lawsuit was not spurred by this action, but Bristol County Sheriff Thomas Hodgson told WBUR he believes their lawsuit is politically motivated.
I would challenge them to come forward and show us any witnesses that were arrested by going forward as a witness who were simply here for immigration overstay or simple violation. That's just not true. And they can't point to the cases, and that's why they won't.
Jennifer, what do you think of the politics of this?
I think there are politics, I think there are politics in everything. I do believe that there is a separation between the federal government and the state government, and I understand what the DAs are saying, but I understand also what the sheriff is saying, and both make sense. And I agree with Renee. I think that maybe this coming to a case and there being a lawsuit is probably the best way to settle the law and figure out what is going to be right going forward. Because, I mean, there are people who are here. If you're here illegally and you commit a crime, then, you know, you should be turned over at some point to ICE. But to prohibit, as the DA said, you know, a child of a rape or, you know, some sort of anyone, right, who has been criminally affected as a victim, and then the person who victimized them gets hauled off and they never have their day in court, that is not fair to the victims. And so, I mean, I think that there has to be some middle ground here that they can figure out and settle the law on.
Right. Now, I mean, not to mention other kinds of victims, like, for example, of domestic violence who are afraid to bring a case against to look for a restraining order or anything like that, because as soon as I walk into that courthouse door, I or my family members or others who may be with me are vulnerable to being picked up by ICE. It's just not right. The courts in Massachusetts ought to be able to do their business in a safe way for all of the people who are involved in the judicial system. And ICE can do its own job without the help of the state courts,
President,
in my view.
President Trump, in that call to Boston Herald Radio, he wondered why Rollins and Ryan are doing this. And he said the people that ICE is looking for are dangerous.
They come from a place that you just can't really understand. They're coming from a... you almost wonder why. What are they doing? They're protecting people that in many cases, and certainly not in all cases, but in many cases are very dangerous people. And you say, why? What are they doing this for? What's the game?
Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey told WBUR she doesn't pay attention to the president's comments and she supports Rollins and Ryan.
This is about making sure that victims of crime, witnesses to crime, aren't deterred from coming forward. And recent actions by ICE agents have had a disruptive and deterring effect. And that's what the DA's complaint is about. And I support what they're doing in terms of raising this as an issue.
Jennifer, you talked about sort of striking some sort of balance. How do you think we do that?
Well, again, I mean, unfortunately, I think part of the problem here is that you have a president who, you know, is a Republican, and you have district attorneys and the attorney general that are Democrats, right? And so I think, one, politics are at play because he's going to say no to anything that they say, regardless of what they say, sadly. And I think that if this is tried out in a court and we can have it and see, you know, okay, maybe the middle ground is everyone's welcome to come into court. ICE doesn't touch them until the case is all done, and then there can be conversations after that. But I think everyone is entitled to their day in court, and maybe that's a better way to do it. So not saying that ICE shouldn't be able to do its job, but our court system needs to be able to do its job.
And one point that Rollins made is that This is criminal court that we're talking about. An ICE procedure is civil, and that criminal should trump civil.
Right. That's another important balance to strike here. I mean, I think the Attorney General, Maura Healey, is right. It's good policy not to pay too much attention to what the president is saying on this and many other issues.
All right. One more topic for our week in review, the decision by the Massachusetts Gaming Commission to hit Wynn Resorts with a $35 million fine. The company will keep the license for its Encore Boston Harbor Casino in Everett, despite the commission's concern about the company concealing information about sexual harassment allegations against company founder and then CEO Steve Wynn. Gaming Commission Chairwoman Kathy Judd Stein says they were disturbed by the company's culture of nondisclosure.
To help ensure future compliance and indeed to punish for transgressions, the commission has imposed a series of penalties and conditions.
Las Vegas Review-Journal reporter Rick Velotta told us that while it's a record-high fine against the company, it's lower than he expected.
I thought it might be a little bit more, and I think a lot of the people that watch the gaming industry suspected that it could have been higher than that, because there was a sense that, you know, the Massachusetts Gaming Commission meant business on this, and they really were disturbed by some of the things that had happened.
They're also personally fining Wynn's current CEO, Matt Maddox, $500,000. The company still plans to open the $2.6 billion Everett Casino next month. Renee, I mean, this, like I said, billion with a B as opposed to million, these fines. Do you think this is enough?
Well, you know, the house always wins. That's the, you know, the verdict here. It's a pittance. It's real money to some people, like you and me, but it's a pittance for the Wynn Corporation. I noticed that the value of the company, the stock, went up in one day on the news that they would be able to keep their license by five times the amount of the fine.
Wow.
And, you know, in one day, the stock went up for that much. So, I mean, you know, this is pocket change for them. You know, it was never realistic to me that they were going to pull the Wynn license. There's just too many facts on the ground. Mm. You know, the steel and glass was in. There were thousands of jobs at stake. You know, I think that all they ever really had, you know, in terms of arrows in their quiver were fines and fees that might make a difference. And I'm not sure that these are high enough to make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, just to put a point on that, the Wynn Resorts averaged a total of about $18.4 million in daily revenue last year, according to a securities filing. Jennifer, what do you think
about
that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Renee. You know, I think that the Gaming Commission was in a really tough spot here, because you don't want to take away jobs that people thought that they were going to have over there. And I mean, that's really an economic builder for a good portion of the state, for jobs and ongoing jobs too in that area. So what are they going to do? They're not going to say, okay, you have to pull out completely. But I think $35 million, you know, like Renee said, it's a lot to us, right? I mean, any of us would really appreciate, like, you know, an eighth, a sixteenth of that.
Right. And it's the biggest, but, it is the biggest fine,
right,
eclipsing the last time that Wynn was fined,
yes,
for the same allegations. But
I think, you know, it could have been more. And maybe, maybe there were other penalties going back into the community and regaining some trust and respect in the communities. But I wish it was more. I'm glad that we got something out of it. I'm glad people still get to have their jobs.
Renee, so looking back into the bigger picture here, do you think the fact that this casino, it was scheduled to open, I mean, not just that it's these jobs, that it's scheduled to open, that it tied the commissioner's hands?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think not only the jobs, but the tax revenue that the state is already dependent upon. I mean, I think, you know, just to make a much broader point, this is what happens when the state becomes dependent on sin tax revenue, whether it's gambling casino revenue or even the new marijuana law revenue that we're seeing a lot of problems with the rollout of that operation. There's corruption, there's, you know, confusion, there's insider playing going on. And I think that, you know, speaking not as a member of the Republican Party, I would say, if we had a broad-based, fair, progressive tax system where people all paid their share, maybe states, not just Massachusetts, but all states, wouldn't be so dependent on these revenues that do tie the hands of commissioners that are trying to roll out these operations in a fair and above-board way.
And Jennifer, what does this say about the Gaming Commission? I mean, should people have faith that if their hands were apparently tied by this, that they are an effective check?
Well, I mean, you know, and I do think that they are an effective check. And the men and women on the commission are intelligent and they're upstanding members of the community of business and law. And, you know, so I have a high regard for them. But I do think that, you know, one, yes, Renee is right in the relying on revenues. Two, I mean, you know, unfortunately, while Deval Patrick was governor of Massachusetts, we allowed to have a number of casinos. So it wasn't just one or two. And so I think that that's another problem was, you know, if you give a leash and you keep letting that leash out, you're going to take as much as you can get. And that it was the problem from day one was that too many casinos were allowed to be here, which is tapping and taxing upon what they can do, what the Gaming Commission can do.
All right. Before we run out of time, let's end with our hubbubs, those brief stories or events catching our attention this week. Renee, what do you have?
Well, tomorrow is the birthday of Jane Jacobs, the famed urbanist who, among other things, saved Greenwich Village from the clutches of the developer Robert Moses back in the 60s. And to celebrate her life, people are holding what they're calling Jane's Walks all over the globe. I mean, this is like from Cambridge to Calcutta, where people are just going out. These are free, citizen-led walks of people's neighborhoods where they celebrate, you know, open space and architecture and civic engagement and just the joy of what Jane Jacobs always called the sidewalk ballet. And so I'm urging all our listeners to just get out there tomorrow and walk.
All right, Jennifer.
And mine is another walk. On Sunday morning is Project Bread's Walk for Hunger. And I believe it's over 20 miles, about 22 miles. And, you know, that is helping our kids who deal with food instability to make sure that families have food and kids are well fed so when they go to school they can learn.
All right. Mine is about the Boston Red Sox. They're headed to the White House, or at least some of them are. The trip for the reigning champs was originally scheduled for February, but postponed due to the shutdown. But the real question on Thursday will be who will show up. Chairman Tom Werner will be there. He said of the trip, it's not appropriate for the Red Sox to be either red or blue. Manager Alex Cora told reporters Monday he's not sure. Says, I'll let you guys know when I decide. He said in the past that if he does go, he would want to use that as an opportunity to discuss Puerto Rico with the president. Some players like Chris Sale and Brock Holt said they will be there. Others like Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley Jr. say they won't. Jennifer Nassor, former chair of the Massachusetts GOP and CEO of Reflect US, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Renee Loft, columnist for the Boston Globe and a contributor to WBUR's Cognoscenti Ideas and Opinion page. It's Friday. I'm going to get it right one day. Thank you as well.
Have a nice weekend.
All right. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is Radio Boston.